We are back. This is The Dive. Thank you so much for tuning in. Drop a Z, drop a like. Okay. Look at that chat. Most beautiful live chat on all the internet. YouTube, Rumble. It is good to be back. Look, I was going to stream. I was supposed to stream the past few days, but I think, I don't know, maybe dehydration. Maybe I was sick. Maybe Bali didn't treat me well the past few days. Let's just put it that way. I think it was dehydration, to be honest. So, you know, cheers. Food poisoning, maybe. I didn't throw up or anything. I think it was dehydration. Anyways, I'm back now. I feel great. Yesterday felt absolutely fucking horrendous. Couldn't move. But Z's in the chat. Let's get it going. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, if you'd like to support the show, please consider donating to our locals, our Patreon, or our GiveSend Go using the links in the description below. And of course, if you'd like to get the sexiest, drippiest merch on the internet, you can do so right now. It's quite easy to... One second, let me fix the audio on that channel real quick. Test. Okay, we're good. All you have to do, we had some technical difficulties, you know, not without problem, not without difficulty are we doing our stream today, but, you know, that's how life goes. So here's our greatest merch on the internet. Hundreds of you have already copped it. Get your merch right now. We have Z merch, Ghost of Kiev merch. We're going to be coming out with new merch this week. It's very, very hot. You are not going to want to miss out on it. And I'm sending the link to our merch in the live chat right now. Oh, let me send it right now. That's not the right link. Here is the right link for your Z merch. Get your Z merch while you still can, while it's still on the internet. You guys have been sending pictures of your Z merch. It looks great. So go grab yours right now. Thank you all for tuning in. We got thousands of people already watching. We're going to have a great stream. Lots to get through today. Lots to cover. And, yeah, I'm just happy to be here. As you can imagine, we've got some big news to discuss. We've got Nord Stream news that's pretty crazy. We've got counter-offensive news from Zelensky. We've got news from Romania. We have Wagner news. We have DeSantis news. We have huge news surrounding the energy crisis in Europe. I guess everyone who said that Europe was going to be fine this winter, I never said that. I said it appeared as though they were remaining unscathed in terms of energy shortages, but the economic fallout of the energy crisis was being felt and will be felt. I mean, Germany alone, indebted themselves like $1 trillion just to make sure that they had enough energy for this winter. Now it's appearing that that is not the case, that they're not going to be all right. So we have a lot of energy crisis news. I've had people be like, oh, Jackson, yes, you were hyperbolic with the whole energy crisis. Well, the fact of the matter is I wasn't being hyperbolic about the energy crisis when I was talking about it months ago. The Europeans were able to avert the worst case scenario by, you know, having a different course of action, which is good. I think that's great. But it appears as though they didn't really... You'll see what I mean. It appears as though things aren't as rosy as initially they were anticipating at the start of the winter. Because at the start of the winter, there was really, really mellow winter all across Europe. Like, it was a very mellow, very warm winter. Basically, all the reports were saying if it was a difficult winter, Europe was pretty fucked. And I got to stop swearing, I guess, because YouTube is saying that they're going to start really cracking down on people who swear. So I guess I have to swear less. Europe, they said if it's a harsh winter, Europe is screwed. If not, then they're going to be probably okay, but maybe not. And it was a mellow winter at the start. Now it's kind of been lasting a while, and it appears as though Europe is beginning to have some difficulties. So we're going to jump into that today as well. What other news do we have? We have news about the Middle East. We got big news about the Middle East. Biden just launched an airstrike on Syria. We got news about Saudi Arabia and Syria, so we got a lot to get through. So thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to drop a like on this stream if you haven't done so yet. Drop a Z in the live chat. And also, let's see, roll call in the live chat. Where's everyone tuning in from? Where's everyone tuning in from right now? YouTube, Rumble, where are we all tuning in from? We got thousands of people watching. Where are you guys all watching from? Let's see it in the live chat. We are broadcasting out of Bali, Indonesia at the moment. So let's see where you are all tuning in from. Let's see. Trinidad and Tobago. Okay, we'll start off there. Who else do we have? Brazil. We've got... who else? We got Switzerland. We've got Missouri. We've got... and, you know, if you're watching this after the fact, comment in the comment section where you're watching from. Let's see it. Okay, we got Connecticut, Syria, Norway. We got a lot of people. Okay, China, Brisbane. We've got Denmark. We've got Philadelphia, Netherlands, Hong Kong, Bali, Michigan. We've got Nova Scotia, Ireland, Portland, Canada, Eritrea, Portugal, Mongolia, Argentina, Vegas, New Zealand, Russia, Malaysia. Who else we got? Who else we got here? Oregon, Arizona, Mississippi. We've got Germany, Austria, El Salvador, Greece. Who else we got? Asheville, North Carolina. We've got, let's do a few more. Idaho, India, South Africa, Tunisia, Sweden, Ghana, Maine, few more, Greece, New York, and Paraguay, and Nicaragua, Serbia. Okay, well, it's good to have all of you here. Thank you so much for tuning in. We've got an international audience here. Let's get into the first story of the day. All right, and where should we start? Where should we start? Let's start here, actually. Let's start here. So, Seymour Hersh uncovered the insanity of the Nord Stream terror attack in his journalistic piece he published in Substack. And no one discussed it for days and days, for weeks actually. The New York Times didn't touch it. The Washington Post didn't touch it. No one wanted to touch the damning piece that Seymour Hersh, the extremely accredited journalist, wrote about in his Substack, okay? And he highlighted in excruciating detail the fact that the United States was behind the Nord Stream terror attack. It was one of the largest industrial terror attacks, environmental terror attacks we've seen in all of, you know, human history. And the Biden administration and all the deep state cronies within it were behind it. They orchestrated it, okay? Well, now he's promised, like, oh, we're going to have some new developments. We're going to have some new developments in the story. Just wait. We're going to have some new developments in this Nord Stream terror attack story. And now we finally have those developments, or at least one of the developments, and it's really crazy. Okay, now, for quite a while, from the first day, myself, Gonzalo Lira, the Duran, a lot of people who cover this business, we all ran with the idea that, you know, we can't say for certain, but likely the reason why the United States carried out this industrial terror attack on the Nord Stream pipeline, you know, a pipeline of our ally, Germany, that, you know, was also with the Russians. The reason why they did this is because they were worried that the Germans were going to negotiate some sort of a peace deal with the Russians to bring an end to the sanctions. Therefore, by way of that, they could get gas flowing through the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines again. The United States blew up the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines, rendering them null and void, then there would be no reason for the Germans to negotiate. According to Seymour Hersh, that's kind of true. Yeah, it is kind of true, but it actually goes much, much deeper than that, and the story is even more nefarious than that. Okay, so let's take a look at what Seymour Hersh has to say, because it is pretty crazy. And not that. Here we go. Seymour Hersh makes new Nord Stream sabotage claim. The Pulitzer Prize winner has alleged the U.S. blew up the pipelines because it was unhappy with a lack of German support for Ukraine. So not because they were worried about, you know, the Germans potentially negotiating with the Russians. Not because of that. Not because they were worried that they were going to bring an end to European support for this war, this proxy war in Ukraine. But simply, actually, because they were pissed off at Germany for not supplying Ukraine with enough support. I mean, the United States has provided hundreds of billions probably in public and dark money for Ukraine over the past just year alone. And the Germans and the Europeans really haven't come close to touching anywhere near that. All of Europe hasn't come close to, you know, providing as much support as the United States has provided. So apparently it's not just because they were worried that they were going to negotiate with the Russians, but they were actually pissed off at the Germans. And that's why they did this attack. U.S. President Joe Biden ordered the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines because he was unhappy with the level of support provided by German Chancellor Olaf Scholz to Ukraine in its conflict with Russia. Hirsch first accused Washington of destroying the key European energy route in an article released in February and made more allegations in an interview with the China Daily newspaper published on Friday. Quote, the U.S. president was afraid Chancellor Scholz not wanting to put more guns and more arms forward for Kiev. That's all. I don't know whether it was anger or punishment, but the net effect is that it cut off a major power source through Western Europe, Hirsch claimed. Despite attempts by the U.S. to deny its involvement in the Nord Stream attack, Europe is in crisis now, and Biden will receive a lot of criticism for what he did in the coming months, the journalist argued. The Pulitzer Prize winner alleged that the people were initially asked to do the job of destroying the pipelines were contacted by U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan towards the end of 2021. The initial purpose of mining Nord Stream 1 and 2, built to deliver Russian gas to Europe through Germany, was to give the U.S. president an option to say to Russian President Putin, quote, if you go to war in Ukraine, we're going to destroy the pipelines. Biden himself publicly confirmed that stance, but unfortunately, those people in the Western press seem to have forgotten, the journalist said. So, there you go. Seymour Hersh coming out and saying the truth. He's saying, well, yeah, this was actually not just about potential negotiations. This was done by the United States. The Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Seymour Hersh says this was done by the United States because he was unhappy about the lack of German support for Ukraine, which is just completely insane. Completely insane. You're supposed to be on the same side in this war, this proxy global war against the Russians, and you're bombing, you're blowing up the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines, okay? Now, the investigation's not done by European authorities. They still have more work to do, according to Denmark. Denmark has invited Nord Stream operator to help salvage a mystery object. The Gazprom-owned company can participate in a planned recovery operation, Copenhagen has indicted or indicated. Danish authorities have said they will permit the Russian-owned operator of the sabotaged Nord Stream 2 pipeline to take part in salvaging of a mystery object discovered in the country's territorial waters. The EU state's warships were recently spotted in the area close to the damaged pipeline. Yes, the Denmark had their warships right next to the Nord Stream pipelines yet again this week. Copenhagen is seeking to clarify the nature of the object, which the Danish Energy Agency will endeavor to do with the assistance from the military, according to a statement on Thursday. Nord Stream 2 AG, whose parent company is Russian energy giant Gazprom, has been invited to participate in that context. So there's this mystery object, as you see here, I guess. I guess this is the mystery object. I don't know. Apparently, there's this mystery object that they seem to have found at the bottom of the pipeline. So we're supposed to believe that a small little boat, like a small little dinghy boat, carried hundreds of pounds of explosives and had the qualifications of divers to go all the way down to the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines and do what officials deemed a state-level act of terrorism on the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines without the consent or knowledge of any state actor in the West. And that all happened, but Denmark needs Russia's help to identify a mystery item on the bottom of the seafloor? Okay. This is too good. You know, it's like, oh, maybe they'll find a passport down there of Russian divers. They're going to find some Russian divers' passport down there as well. I'm sure they will. They're going to find the passport in pristine condition. It's just going to be laying there with Vladimir Putin's own face on it. But, you know, obviously the real meat and potatoes is being blocked by the United States still today. The United States is blocking the Nord Stream probe. Washington denies any involvement in the bombing of the pipelines, and they're still blocking the investigation. So Yeah, you smelt it, you dealt it. I say they're saying, "Oh, we can't investigate. We can't investigate whose asshole farted. It was yours. It was yours. We smell something bad. We think it was Putin. No, that was you. That was you." Now, Germany. This puts Germany in a very interesting position, because now we have like all the more information that continues to unravel from this story of how, you know, the U.S. was definitively behind this. I mean, they all read the paper. They, Olaf Scholz, Annalena Baerbock, they read Seymour Hersh's article. Make no mistake about it. Every leader, Vladimir Putin, read that article. Joe Biden was read that article. I don't think he knows how to read anymore, but I think he was read that article. Everyone in that meeting read that. Everyone read that article. That article is probably one of the most read pieces of journalism amongst global leaders of any article in the past 50 years. Everyone read that article, okay? And that article definitively proves that the U.S. was behind this, and they had nefarious intent towards the Germans in doing this. So, given that the Germans now find themselves in also a precarious position since, you know, they're having energy problems now, when do they begin pointing the finger? That's the question that I have. Okay, I mean, take a look at this right here. So, if you don't believe me, first we have this. Scholz says no reason for concern as Germany's largest banks, the shares slump. Deutsche Bank is a very profitable bank, the German chancellor has stated, as its shares have fallen by 15%. Deutsche Bank, Germany's by far largest lender, would hardly suffer the same fate as embattled Credit Suisse, a German chancellor, Olaf Scholz, assured journalists on Friday. There was no reason to be concerned about the bank's health, he said at a press conference in Brussels, as the bank's share fell 15% in a single day. It's okay. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. We'll be fine without Jeffrey Epstein's money. We'll be fine in the middle of an energy crisis. It's fine. And you say, Jackson, how bad is this energy crisis already? Well, let's take a look. I mean, Germans already being warned to conserve energy because there's a gas shortage. Now we're seeing this. Now they're being warned of a legitimate gas shortage. Consumers should continue efforts to conserve energy ahead of next winter, according to the National Utilities Regulator. German businesses and households may need to further slash their natural gas consumption, which, by the way, they're not meeting the goals of the stated goals of yet. And this is being done in an effort to avoid an energy crunch next winter. Klaus Müller, the head of Germany's Federal Network Agency, has warned. In an interview with the Financial Times on Thursday, Müller talked about the risk of potential gas shortages, warning that Germany's power crisis is not over, and much depends on whether next winter is colder than the last. According to the official, the situation also largely depends on whether the government continues to limit the use of gas and ensure diversified supplies. Without any Russian pipeline gas at all, we could have some problems. Okay, so again, the question I have for the Germans is, when do you start pointing the finger? When do you start pointing the finger at the United States for causing the crisis, causing the mess you're in, the economic crisis, the energy crisis? When do you start pointing the finger? Because clearly, Olaf Scholz didn't have any questions for Joe Biden when he met with him just 2 weeks ago. He didn't have any questions. The press wasn't allowed to ask questions about the Nord Stream pipeline, wasn't allowed to ask questions about Seymour Hersh. You know, the message was very clear. You got to be hush-hush about this. The U.S. definitely did not blow up the Nord Stream pipeline attacks and cause the subsequent energy and economic crisis that Germany is facing. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to drop a like on this stream, drop a Z in the live chat, and let's get into the next story. Okay, so I do want to talk about this. This is very important. I do want to talk about this. We've got other great stories today, but I want to talk about this. So, you know, it wasn't too long ago when I asked the question to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis's spokeswoman, Christine Pushaw, what are Governor Ron DeSantis's foreign policy decisions? You know, at the time when I asked, it looked like he was a serious contender for president of the United States in 2024. Surely the Republican nomination in some polls he was leading. Now, he still looks like a serious contender, though he's not leading. Donald Trump is leading right now. Ron DeSantis is close second, though. So, excuse me. So I still have the question, you know, what are his foreign policy positions? I think it's very important, you know, especially considering the fact that he has a very, very troubling record in his time when he served in the United States Congress. So Christine Pushaw, Governor Ron DeSantis' spokeswoman, replied to me and she said, well, Governor Ron DeSantis is a governor and he's focused on serving the needs of the people of Florida. And he's not actively campaigning for president. He doesn't have any ambitions to at the moment. So therefore, he doesn't have any formal opinions on foreign policy. Well, we all know that's bullshit. The question I think could be answered by his actions. Public records show that Mr. DeSantis does have some foreign policy positions. He does have some affinity for certain countries over other countries. For example, Governor Ron DeSantis really loves Israel. He really, really loves Israel. Okay. Now, he loves Israel so much that public records show that out of the 3 foreign trips that he took as a House member and the 1 foreign trip that Governor Ron DeSantis took as governor of the state of Florida, all of them were to Israel. He really likes Israel. Okay. He loves Israel. So he loves Israel so much that he's only ever visited, in all the years he was in the House, all the years he was governor, he's only ever visited Israel. Now, I'll say, you know, make of that what you will, I'd say that he is 100,000% a deep state warmongering pig. But, you know, I'll let you have your own thoughts and opinions as to his affinity with Israel. But there's more than that, of course, and I want to enlighten all of you. Because just last week, Tucker Carlson asked each perspective GOP candidate a simple question. What are your thoughts on the Ukraine war? And, you know, Governor Ron DeSantis came out and he said, well, I really like, I really think that this Ukraine issue is not in the top 5 issues that Americans care about. It's a territorial dispute. It's a border dispute. And it's not something we should really involve ourselves in. You know, that's what he said. And even Tucker Carlson, when he covered this segment, he said, I never thought that Governor Ron DeSantis would call the war in Ukraine a something as minor as a border dispute. He agrees, but he said, I didn't ever think that he would say something like that. I thought that he would just be right along with like the Mike Pompeos, the Nikki Haley's of the world in saying Slava Ukraini and let's support Ukraine, right? Well, turns out that DeSantis wanted to clarify his stance on Ukraine. A few days later, he did an interview with Piers Morgan, and he came out, and in addition to throwing like balls of shit at Donald Trump over the whole Stormy Daniels thing with the potential indictment, he also came out and wanted to clarify his stance on Ukraine because he realized that many of his Slava Ukraini supporters were very upset by, you know, many of his deep state supporters, many of the people who are going to be bankrolling his campaign, they're very upset by the fact that he called the war in Ukraine a territorial dispute, even though that's true. Okay, that's why I call him Deep State DeSantis. Don't support this guy. He is the enemy within. He's the greatest threat to America. He's going to be George Bush 2.0 if he wins his campaign or worse. But this is what he did. Okay, so Governor Ron DeSantis came out and clarified his stance on Ukraine because apparently it wasn't clear. Apparently it was mischaracterized. Yes, it was mischaracterized. Okay, so in an interview with TV host Piers Morgan, the full version of which will air on Friday, the potential Republican presidential candidate insisted that Russia was wrong to take over Crimea and attack Ukraine. Earlier this month, DeSantis told Fox News anchor Tucker Carlson that becoming further entangled in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not one of the many vital national interests of the U.S. Okay, so the governor also argued that the U.S. should not provide assistance to Ukraine in terms of an F-16 fighter jet, long-range missiles, or American troop deployments, okay? So it sparked backlash among some of his deep state supporters, and now he's come out and said, well, I was mischaracterized, you know, yeah, there's some difficult fighting going on there, that's what I was referring to, there's a lot of ethnic Russians there, and yeah, I don't think it's a territorial dispute. I think Russia was wrong to take over Crimea and attack Ukraine. So, Deep State DeSantis strikes again. Deep State DeSantis. I don't like this whole Ron DeSanctimonious thing that Trump has pinned on him. I think Deep State DeSantis is much better, and I hope Trump uses that. If he uses it, please give me credit. Deep State DeSantis. But look, you really don't have to dig all that hard to find out what Deep State DeSantis really feels like about Ukraine. You know, put aside all the flip-flopping of the I said this, I was mischaracterized, this is how I really feel, this is how I really feel. Just take a look at this. If Ron DeSantis was in Congress today, I guarantee you he would be voting to send another $80 billion to Ukrainian Nazis. In 2015, DeSantis co-sponsored a bill that claimed Russia illegally occupied Crimea, argued that Yanukovych was democratically deposed. You remember the guy that was illegally thrown out of Ukraine's presidency in a violent coup when they came up 10 votes short of impeaching him, and then they illegally forced him out of power while he was still in Ukraine. He was still on Ukrainian territory. He argued that Yanukovych was democratically deposed rather than ousted in a coup and guaranteed U.S. loans for Ukraine. To make matters worse, that very same spokeswoman for Ron DeSantis that I questioned, you know, what are his foreign policy positions, and she refused to give me an answer. This is her. This is his main spokeswoman, you know, the person that publicly defends Ron DeSantis all the time on social media, on Twitter. You've seen her, I'm sure. Christine Pushaw. This is what she had to say. This is how I will always remember Ukraine, 2017 to 2019. The last pick is from Zelensky's election night. So the last pick, as you can see here, is her kissing Volodymyr Zelensky on the lips. That's what I heard. I mean, maybe that's his wife, but I saw people say that that's her kissing him on the lips, which really wouldn't make sense to me, but maybe it is. But this is definitively her with Saakashvili, the Georgian turned Ukrainian politician turned U.S. Political refugee turned Ukrainian expat turned Georgian prisoner. That's Mikhail Saakashvili. And anyways, so she was a part of Zelensky's presidential campaign. And she was there on his presidential campaign victory party, and she's a very big Zelensky supporter, is so big, in fact, such a big Zelensky op that she had to register belatedly as an agent of the foreign deep state. Christine Pushaw's disclosure of work with Mikhail Saakashvili came after contact from the Justice Department, her attorney said. So this is June 8th, 2022. Yeah. DeSantis' own spokeswoman illegally was doing work for Mikhail Saakashvili. I'll tell you about Saakashvili and who he is, but illegally doing work unregistered as a foreign agent. You know, I get accused of being, by all the, you know, NAFO Ukraine simps on Twitter, I get accused of being a unregistered foreign agent of Russia all the time. But it's like, the truth of the matter is, if I was an unregistered foreign agent, the FBI or someone would be knocking at my door and arresting me already. You know, that would have already happened. I'm not an unregistered foreign agent of anywhere. Christine Pushaw, however, was an unregistered foreign agent of Mikhail Saakashvili. Now, if you watch the film Ukraine on Fire, you remember Mikhail Saakashvili. He was the guy who led the Rose Revolution in the early 2000s. He's the guy that led that. So when the U.S. was attempting to create a coup in Georgia, another very vital strategic interest for Russia, and create a coup there and implant a Western leader there, they did what was called the Rose Revolution. In Ukraine, they had the Maidan Revolution, and previously in 2004, the Orange Revolution. In Georgia, they had the Rose Revolution. And the Rose Revolution was led by Mikhail Saakashvili. He was a U.S. plant. He was then ousted by the Georgian people not too long after taking power in a violent seizure of power, backed by the U.S. coup interests. And then after that, he fled. So he fled to Ukraine, something like that, or he fled to the United States. And then after the Maidan coup in 2014 in Ukraine, And specifically after the Odessa massacre in Odessa, he was appointed the regional governor. He gave up his Georgian citizenship. He became a Ukraine citizen, and he was appointed the regional governor of Georgia. And then after that, I'm pretty sure Petro Poroshenko, like, removed his Ukrainian citizenship because he did something he didn't like. So then he went to the U.S., and then he somehow found himself back in Georgia. Now he's sitting in a Georgian prison somewhere. So that's who he's, you know, he's a deep state Fed to, you know, to the nth degree. That's who Christine Pushaw was an unregistered foreign agent of. That's DeSantis's head spokeswoman. So if you're wondering who DeSantis is and the interest that he serves, look no further than that. Look no further than his voting record and look no further than his flip-flopping on Ukraine. He's a deep state Fed through and through. That's why we call him Deep State DeSantis. Happy to clear the air on that one for all of you. All right, let's get a move on here to our next story. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to drop a like on this stream. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. We got more great news on the way. Yeah, everyone's like, oh, is DeSantis really that bad? Yeah, DeSantis is really that fucking bad. He is. So, where do we want to go next? That story's great. And he's so fake. He's so fake and phony. Did you guys see his laugh? And the Pierce Morgan interview was so weird. Such a weird dude. All right, let's get into our next story. So, it appeared as though most everyone was saying, oh, Europe actually is fine. They don't have an energy crisis. They don't have an economic crisis. Anyone who claimed there was going to be an energy crisis was simply a Russian propagandist, a Putin propagandist. Yeah. So apparently you're a Putin propagandist if you repeat and highlight all the claims of the International Energy Agency, the IEA, if you highlight the claims of, you know, German energy officials and French energy officials and British energy officials, which, by the way, I mean, they definitely have a cost of living crisis that was sparked by the energy crisis. Okay, so yeah, they do have it. Everyone says, oh, they have a cost of living crisis. They have a, Jackson, it's not an energy crisis. It's a cost of living. Why do you think they have a cost of living crisis? You think one day that all the, you know, private enterprises in Europe and in the UK just decided, oh, we're going to raise the price for eggs and for bread and for basic commodities and for manufactured goods. We're just all going to collectively raise the prices in unison for the fun of it. No, they had to do that because, I mean, multiple reasons. You have the long-standing ramifications of COVID era policies, you know, endless printing of money, injecting it into the stock market, the banks. You have also supply chain issues. You have also all the sanctions on Russia. You have also the massive energy crisis. You have also the issues with fertilizer. I mean, there's like a lot of different issues at play here. The energy crisis was like, it was the cherry on top. It was like, ah, yeah, let's thoroughly screw ourselves over, right? So, yeah, there is an energy crisis, but it appears as though for everyone who's saying like, oh, you know, there's not going to be a serious energy crisis, they spoke a little bit too soon. Okay, because the fact of the matter is, though the winter in Europe did start off quite warm, mellow, now it's long lasting. It's continuing to go on. The winter is here, and it doesn't seem to be going away. I know different continent, different hemisphere, whatever, but I saw the weather in Los Angeles. I'm not in Los Angeles right now, but I saw the weather in Los Angeles last night. 47 degrees Fahrenheit. I think that's around like 8 degrees Celsius, right? 8, 9 degrees Celsius. I was like, 47 degrees Fahrenheit in Los Angeles on March 25th. What? What is going on? Okay, Like, that's, it's probably the same temperature in Russia right now. What's the temperature in Russia? Let's see, Moscow. Moscow is, oh, it's a little bit colder. It's 11 degrees. No, that's Celsius, Fahrenheit. 40 degrees. So yeah, it's very close to Moscow right now. So I was like, what the hell? Anyways, let's take a look at how serious this energy crisis is seeming to get as the winter continues on, okay? Because again, I think some people may have spoken a little bit too soon. So here we have France. France is tapping into strategic fuel reserves. The move reportedly comes amid continued strikes over pension reforms. France's energy minister has revealed that strategic national reserves of fuel have been utilized in a targeted manner since the beginning of March. According to a Reuters report on Tuesday, the ministry did not provide details of any shortages, citing confidentiality. The ministry highlighted that supply problems have been building in some southern regions, while several refineries were still blocked from delivering products after 2 weeks of strikes. Workers protesting proposed changes in the French pension system have disrupted fuel deliveries and refining operations, it said. So there you have France. They have structural issues with the striking workers, over a million striking now in major cities. And, you know, this is something that I can't say I'm too surprised about, because France had difficulty with their nuclear reactors. They said that they were going to get a number of their nuclear reactors back in operation actually a month ago, and that didn't happen. They said they were going to get some in operation by, I think, like December, some in operation by February, and that didn't happen. It's taking too long now. So they're having to rely on these refineries, and they can't rely on the refineries right now because deliveries and refining operations are being blocked by the striking workers. Okay, then you also had the whole, remember you had the whole petrol station striking situation in France. France has massive strikes like every other month, but that's not all. France is not the only one. Here you have this as well. Moldova is worried they may lose Russian gas supplies due to problems with transit through Ukraine. So Ukraine is posing an issue here. Moldova said that the Russian energy giant Gazprom may completely halt gas supplies to the country at a certain stage. And the government is already considering such a scenario, Energy Minister Viktor Polyakov said on Monday. In an interview with Vulchia Basarabayi TV channel, he noted that in such a case, Chisinau would also have to deal with an energy crisis in Transnistria. Something tells me the Russians will make sure that Transnistria is okay. But again, that's not all. That's not all. Finland is in such a tricky scenario right now with their energy, you know, as they are trying to join NATO, that they are refusing to stop buying Russian gas. One might call this fueling the Putin-Russian war machine, the war chest. The EU country has vowed to end energy imports from Moscow, but Finland won't stop buying Russian gas. Finnish state-run energy provider Gasum intends to continue buying gas from Russia, a news outlet reported on Monday, citing a statement from the company. Gasum has a long-term gas supply contract with Russia, which was signed before the Ukraine-related EU sanctions and Russian counter-sanctions were introduced last year, according to the statement. This will be valid for several more years, the company said, noting that it is obliged to pay under the contract and doesn't intend to breach this agreement. Quote, the contract is so-called take-or-pay contract, which is common in gas supply contracts. It means that Gazprom is obliged to pay a certain amount for liquefied natural gas every year, whether we get it from Russia or not, the company explained to YLE in an email. Gasum noted that it has no legal grounds to terminate the contract or take it to arbitration. Now, I say this is bogus because, well, I mean, we just saw the Russians had all their money stolen from the EU authorities and seized, and now they're going to be giving it to Ukraine if they can find it all. Seems as though some of it disappeared. And, you know, we also saw numerous contracts with Russians that were nixed. So for Finland to be saying this, it is cover for them, because they understand that they can't get gas from anywhere else. They can't get their LNG from anywhere else, so they have to get it from Russia. So this is their cover. So Finland is screwed without Russia, essentially, is what they're saying, for years to come. Germans also are probably the most screwed, as we all know, with the Nord Stream pipeline attack, with the fact that the Germans were heavily reliant on Russia for their LNG prior to the war beginning, Germany could find themselves in a potential energy crisis next winter, pending how the winter goes. Germany has managed to avoid an energy crisis this winter, but there is a risk that the heating season will be more difficult. Klaus Müller, head of Germany's Federal Network Agency, said in an interview with the Rheinische Post. According to Müller, the country's gas storage facilities are currently 64% full. At the start of winter, they were like 97% full. And even if the weather turns cold in the next few days, German energy supply for the remainder of the heating season is secured. He warned, however, that we should not relax, as things could be different next winter. We cannot rule out a gas shortage next winter. Risk factors are that the winter of 2023 and 2024 will be very cold, that households and companies will save too little, that the LNG terminals will not work as planned. We would also have to help our neighboring countries with their energy problems, Müller explained. Germany largely managed to avoid energy shortages due to unseasonably mild weather throughout the past couple months, but Müller noted that with respect to the next heating season, the weather poses the biggest risk. Quote, "We cannot rely on the fact that the next winter will be mild again. When it's cold, many households immediately stop saving. In warm October, they save more than 20% of the gas, while during the cold snap in December, only 7%, which is way below their targeted saving rates." So Germany seems to be pretty screwed, you know, if the situation gets bad. That's why German leaders are now saying that they want the Nord Stream pipeline repaired. Saxony Premier in Germany, Michael Kretschmer, said that the sabotage gas pipelines would be needed if Germany and Russia resume trade. And I think that's fair. I think that they should be repaired. The Russians have said that they'd be prepared to repair them. Britain is also facing a crisis right now, a cost of living crisis that is, you know, created by this energy crisis. Britain's facing a disastrous decade, though. Households will get poorer and pay more tax over the coming years, a think tank projects. Real wages in the UK will not return to their 2008 level until 2026, despite an easing of inflation. Okay, so they're going to have a disastrous entire decade. All right, they're not going to get back to the 2008 level until 2026. Then we have this in Poland, a country that is pondering the idea of, you know, occupying Western Ukraine, sending their men into Ukraine. They're doubling their military at the moment right now. They're drastically increasing military spending for Ukraine to take on Russia. Poland has put out this statement. Poland says that they are asking its citizens to restrict clothes washing. Washing machines, microwaves, and other high-power appliances should not be used in the evening, Poland's state power company said. Well, that's surely an indication of a healthy and prosperous society, right? Don't use your machines, microwaves, washing machines, and high-power appliances in the evening. Polish households have been urged by the country's national grid operator to refrain from using washing machines and electric heaters in the evenings, to avoid straining the power supply. Keep in mind, this is in the middle of a cold snap in Poland in the midst of winter. And they're saying, don't use the heater in the late evening, okay? On the flip side, however, if you're wondering how Russia is doing, let's take a look at Russia. Because Russia is now not only the number one supplier of oil to China, they surpassed Saudi Arabia in 2023, in the first 2 months of the year, overtaking Saudi Arabia, Russia became China's largest supplier of oil, which is huge news. Russia is also the number one supplier of gas to China now. Okay, Russia has become China's largest supplier of natural gas, beating Turkmenistan, Qatar, Australia, and obviously the EU. Total supplies of the Russian fuel amounted to 2.7 billion cubic meters in January. During the same period, Turkmenistan and Qatar supplied 2.2 billion cubic meters each, while 1.9 billion cubic meters more came from Australia. And that's not all. Russia is also working on a massive, massive mega deal, as they're calling it, with China in terms of a, they're calling it the Power of Siberia 2 pipeline, Okay, talks between Moscow and Beijing on building the Power of Siberia 2 natural gas pipeline that will double existing transit capacity are at the final stages, TASS news agency reported on Thursday, citing a senior Russian official. According to Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak, China and Russia expect the deal to be struck by the end of the year. Gazprom and Russia's China's CNPC are finalizing their contractual obligations. A feasibility study in the project for the pipeline routes through Mongolia are already underway. We hope, we are sure, that our companies will reach an agreement and sign the contract by the end of the year. The Power of Siberia 2 pipeline is expected to supply 50 billion cubic meters of Russian gas to China annually from 2030 onwards, okay? So that would bring China-bound gas deliveries from Russia to 100 billion cubic meters per year, absolutely blowing everyone else out of the water. So if you're wondering how China and Russia are doing, they're doing just fine. They're doing just fine. Russia and OPEC Plus member states are also warning about a potential future of global oil shortages. The global market will face oil supply shortages within the next few years due to a lack of investment in the industry, Russian Deputy Energy Minister Pavel Sorokin warned on Thursday. Oil production is now underinvested due to the actions of Western countries, he said, referring to a shift towards renewable energy that has prompted companies around the world to slash investment in hydrocarbons. All right, so Russia and China are doing just fine. The European Union and the UK, however, seems as though they are in for a hell of a next few years, if not a hell of a next decade, in terms of a lower standard of living, lower life expectancy, lower prosperity, lower levels of energy supply, more energy shortages, and overall a higher cost of living. All right. All right. All right. Let's get some Z's in the chat. By the way, as always, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by donating to our locals, our Patreon, or our GiveSinGo, which are all linked below in the description of this video on YouTube and Rumble. And we also have our amazing merch, our Z merch, which you should grab. It's the best merch on the internet. We have our Z merch, our Ghost of Kiev merch, and more merch coming this week. You're not going to want to miss the next drop, so be on the lookout. There is the link to our merch. And by the way, I think we can add mods on Rumble now. Is that true? Did they add moderator capabilities? We should add some mods on Rumble. So if you're interested in being a mod on YouTube or Rumble, let me know. Reach out on Twitter, reach out on Discord or Twitter. Let me know, and we will get that situated. All right. And on that note, let's get into the next story. Let me first do this. So, let's talk about the counteroffensive. What's with the obsession with Soleimani? LOL, Jackson has talked about his murder many times. What are people saying about Soleimani? We stand to clear the air. We stand with Soleimani. And may he rest in peace. It was the worst thing Trump did. Took the advice of Mike Pompeo. Worst thing he ever did. And I stand with the martyr of Qasem Soleimani. He was fighting ISIS. He was fighting Daesh and doing a very good job. And stand with the late Soleimani. They will get their revenge eventually. They will get their retribution, their vindication. They will get it all eventually. Guaranteed. It will take time, but they will get it. Trump didn't do it. Yes, he did. And Trump had multiple errors, lapses of judgment, poor choices he made throughout his presidency, mostly at the start, not really at the end. But yeah. Yeah, rest in peace, Soleimani. All right, let's get into the next story. So, for quite some time, we've heard talks of a Ukrainian counteroffensive that would cut off Russia from their land bridge to Crimea, which they have established by way of this special military operation in Ukraine. This is something that the West is very supportive of Ukraine embarking on, though Ukraine has decided that they're not ready. More on that momentarily, but the real question is, why not negotiate peace? Why not negotiate peace in the Minsk Accords, the Minsk II Accords, the Turkey negotiations, the Israeli negotiations, the Chinese negotiations? There's been five different substantive efforts of negotiations by way of the Russians and third-party states long before this war even began, all of which have been denied, refused, or rebuked by the Western officials and Ukraine. Okay, now it appears as though Ukraine is having problems with these Chinese peace proposals. A 12-point plan was put forward by Chinese officials just about a week and a half ago. Russians seem to like the peace proposal. Brazil also seemed to favor the peace proposal. Their leader, President Lula da Silva, is heading to China, I believe this week, to meet with Xi Jinping, where he will be discussing creating a Ukraine peace club. Which will be interesting. We'll see if it happens. I mean, Lula is not the Lula of yesteryear. He's not the Lula of his previous, you know, presidency. I know he was the founding member of BRICS, but he's changed. You know, he said that he supports Ukraine. He said that he believes Russia's actions were illegal and illegitimate and they shouldn't have done it. He's the first BRICS leader to say anything like that, to publicly condemn Russia and to stand with Ukraine. So he's not a neutral actor. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does here in China. He's also said he's indicating that, you know, Brazil might join the Belt and Road Initiative. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if he creates this peace club with China. We'll see if he creates this Belt and Road Initiative with China. You know, Bolsonaro also seriously considered joining the Belt and Road Initiative. I'm sure there were many deep state actors in the U.S. who encouraged him not to do that and probably prevented him from doing that. But he said he wanted to join the Belt and Road Initiative. So we'll see if Lula does it. If he does, good. If not, then, well, I mean, I won't be surprised. I'll be surprised if he does it. I'll say that. Anyways, so now, you know, the U.S. is saying like, oh, you know, there's we don't know about all this stuff. Zelensky advisor says that they have obstacles. They've flagged some obstacles to talks with Xi Jinping and China. China is yet to decide whether it wants to mediate in the Ukraine conflict or carefully stand aside, top official claims. No, that's not what's happening. So Zelensky's officials are saying that. No, that's not what's happening. China has said, here is the peace proposal that we think best works for everyone. Here's our 12-point plan. If you'd like to talk about it, let's talk. Ukraine, West, everyone, let's talk. But Ukraine has said that, you know, they're like, why will Xi Jinping not return our phone calls? We want to have phone calls. Because your phone calls are predicated on not agreeing to or even looking at this peace proposal that China has put forward. Okay, you say you want Putin out of power. You say you want all Russian troops out of Donetsk, Lugansk, Zaporozhye, Kherson, and wherever else they might go. You say you want Russian personnel out of Crimea, which was legally brought into the Russian Federation by way of an 86% vote amongst the Crimean people in 2014. You know, it's like it's a non-starter. Okay, so you have to make serious indications that you're willing to actually negotiate if you want the Chinese to talk to you and take you seriously. Okay, Now, the other obstacle I'm sure that, you know, they're referring to here, Zelensky's officials referring to here, is probably this. The U.S. has said they're uneasy about China's Ukraine peace plan. Washington fears that other states will believe it doesn't want to end the conflict. There is a sense of unease in the White House about how consequences of its dismissal of the Chinese peace plan for Ukraine, Bloomberg reported on Thursday, citing an unnamed official in the administration of President Joe Biden. In February, the U.S. publicly brushed off the roadmap for peace presented by China for conflict for the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. However, Bloomberg reported that Washington now fears it could be backed into a corner by Beijing's proposals, with the Biden administration said to be concerned that it has created the impression that the U.S. does not want peace. You don't say. You don't say. Sending, you know, officials to go and nuke the Istanbul Agreement, nuke the Israeli negotiations, nuke the Minsk Accords, publicly admit you nuked the Minsk II Accords, admit that you were responsible for the 2014 coup in Ukraine, funneling hundreds of billions of dollars in military support for Ukraine. You don't say. People in other countries think that the U.S. doesn't want peace. Oh, who could have assumed that would be the outcome? Oh my God. No, what the U.S. wants is a counteroffensive. That's why they're sending so many weapons, so much military intelligence, so many supplies to Ukraine. Ukrainian counteroffensive will shock the world, U.S. advisor says. Kiev's forces will be in better shape than they were a year ago. Dan Rice has predicted. Dan Rice. Well, I'm sure Dan Rice has some sort of a extremely, accredited, pedigree, some amazing master's degree in public policy and international relations from some prestigious U.S., Ivy League university. But none of that changes the fact that Ukraine's military has been grinded down. Ukraine's military potential has also been greatly stunted by way of the previous 1 year of fighting in the war in Ukraine. They've lost their best fighters. They've lost their best fighting capabilities, tanks, in terms of, fighter jets, in terms of the various, javelins, M777 howitzers, basically anything and everything. I mean, they're literally using 19th century arms to try and fight the Russians in Bakhmut right now. They're using arms from the 1800s to try and fight the Russians. So, yeah, I don't think they're doing that well. I don't think that their military is ever going to look like what it was a year ago. And, I'll say that they did have a pretty formidable military, probably the strongest military in all of Europe, maybe one of the strongest militaries in the world besides Russia and China. I mean, the U.S., I guess. But in terms of battle-hardened, battle-ready, trained to NATO standards, ready to go, I mean, they were one of the top. Now that's not the case. They've lost far too many men, probably 170,000, 200,000 men. Your military is never going to be the same again, okay? And you've already lost over 100,000 square kilometers. But they're still insisting that their military in this renewed offensive that is very much going to happen is going to cut off Russia from their land bridge to Crimea. The UK is even pondering the idea of sending depleted uranium shells to Ukraine. Depleted uranium shells promised to Kiev by the UK would cause irreparable harm to soldiers and civilians alike, Moscow claims. So they're seriously talking about sending depleted uranium shells, which have caused, well, first of all, are illegal by international law, and the US knows by way of extensive usage all across the world that these depleted uranium shells don't just cause harm for the soldiers at war. They cause harm for generations and generations to civilians, birth rates, birth defects, cancer, all that stuff, right? I don't have to show you the pictures for you to know what really happens when depleted uranium shells are used. You can look at them for yourself. It's a travesty, okay? But they're also talking about, Washington is talking about sending more cluster munitions for Ukraine in preparation for this counteroffensive. But today, something very odd happened. There's all this buildup. There's all this hype for this counteroffensive in Ukraine. Everyone's saying, oh, this is going to be the biggest, baddest counteroffensive we've ever seen. The spring counteroffensive, it's going to cut off Russia from their land bridge to Crimea. And then Zelensky came out today and he said the unthinkable. He said, it's not enough. We can't do it. We can't fight. The military forces of Ukraine are not yet ready for a counteroffensive in the eastern direction. This was stated by the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. Quote, "We can't start the counteroffensive yet. Without tanks, artillery, and U.S. multiple launch rocket systems, HIMARS, we cannot send our soldiers to the front lines," the Ukrainian leader said. According to the Chinese newspaper, the Japan News, he stressed that absolutely no conditions have been formed for this. The interview with Zelensky took place on the train on the way to Kiev after visiting the Ukrainian-controlled part of the Kherson region. So there you have it from the man himself. They're not ready. Now, what do I think about this? I think that it's very possible that no matter how many troops, no matter how much military hardware, no matter how many munitions they have, Zelensky very well could try to launch this spring counteroffensive. I think, though, that Zelensky is primarily focused on Bakhmut. I think he really is concerned about Bakhmut, so much so that he's willing to let Avdiivka fall in a span of just weeks to try and maintain resources for Bakhmut and protect Bakhmut, because he's made such a big spiel about this, traveled all the way to the United States Congress to talk about the importance of Bakhmut, literally brought a flag signed by the Ukrainian defenders of Bakhmut and gifted it to the Vice President of the United States and the Speaker of the House. He really cares about Bakhmut because of the strategic symbolic significance of the town. Okay, so he really, and also, he understands, as he publicly stated, that once Russia takes Bakhmut, they're going to have a straight shot to Kramatorsk. Kramatorsk is going to be the last fighting, the final chapter of all that goes down in the Donbass, okay? After, you know, they're done with the Donbass, feasibly the Russians could move on towards Kharkov again, towards Kherson, then Mykolaiv, then Odessa, then Transnistria. I mean, who knows? I don't know. I'm not the Russian military. I don't have the Russian military plans before me. I don't know. But I do think that it is very serious that there's probably a few things going on here. Either A, Zelensky is being honest in the sense that they don't have the men and munitions ready for a counteroffensive to cut off the Crimean land bridge. B, Zelensky wants to keep his men and resources focused on other areas like Bakhmut and Avdiivka. Or C, Zelensky is ready for this spring counteroffensive because, frankly, he doesn't care how many men he loses or how many pieces of artillery and munitions are wasted on any given, you know, bout of battle in this war in Ukraine. But he's using every last second he has to lobby the West for more munitions, more man support, more artillery support, so on and so forth. So we'll see what comes of this. We'll continue following the news surrounding this counteroffensive, just as we follow all the news surrounding the fighting on the front. What do you guys think, though? Let me know in the live chat. What do you guys think? I'm curious to see what you all have to think. And maybe we should invite on Brian Berletic to discuss this, because he is an expert in this field, and I've been meaning to have him on recently. What have you guys been hearing? What do you think? That was the news as of today, that Zelensky came out and said just that. What do you guys think? 300,000 troops in Poland? Technically not yet. They're building up their military to 300,000, but they have 150,000 right now. Ukraine still has people to shoot. U.S. fireworks. Lobbying for Western support. Ukraine has insufficient resources. Yeah, I don't know. We will see, though, in due time. Not long now. Not long now. All right. I'd like to take a moment while we have it to say thank you to our amazing sponsor for today's stream. And that is the one, the only, American Financing. So you can check them out using the link that I'm going to send to all of you in the live chat right now on YouTube and on Rumble. There's the link. There you go. There's our link on YouTube, and there's the link on Rumble for everyone. I think it's sending. Is it sending? There we go. There's the link to American Financing. Go check them out. I want to tell you a little bit about them because at this moment in time, it's probably worthwhile checking them out because I know most of you are feeling the impacts of inflation. From filling up your car to going to get groceries to just buying a carton of eggs, home repairs, everything is more expensive right now. And most of you are paying your bills with your credit cards. How do we know that? Because credit card debt is skyrocketing right now, over $1 trillion in the last year. And it's the biggest increase we've seen in 20 years in the United States. So if you're a homeowner and you are struggling, there is a way out. You need to talk to my friends at American Financing. Again, the link is in the live chat and in the description. They will put together a plan for you to pay off that high interest debt and create meaningful savings for you every month. They're saving families like you $700 to $1,000 per month on average. And it takes no cost, no obligation to get started with them. Okay. If you start today, you could even delay two mortgage payments, giving you greater savings up front. So don't forget to tell them I sent you. Talk to my friends at American Financing using the link in the live chat right now. They're a great company. And when you click on that link, it supports the show. Thank you to American Financing for supporting us here. And on that note, let's get into the next story. All right. So, let's go to this story. Just when I thought, global politics and this situation in Ukraine couldn't get any more odd, any more weird, any more convoluted and difficult to understand, okay? I mean, it's just like Ukraine has become like a carcass of a state that all these vultures, all these maggots, all of these rats, and I don't mean just like tiny, I mean like the New York City subway rats, the fat, greedy piggy rats are feeding on. Okay, that's what Ukraine has become, a carcass of what it once was. Okay, just what I thought it couldn't get any more strange, here we are. Okay, you have news this week, which we covered, of Poland potentially building up their military by a factor of two times, 300,000 men, highly strategic investments in military capabilities, artillery, munitions. They're building up everything for potential occupation of Western Ukraine. Now we're seeing this news out of Romania. Take a look at this. Yeah. NATO member to consider bill seeking land grab in Ukraine. A Romanian lawmaker has proposed annexing territory stolen by the USSR! Oh no, they stole the territory from Romania. So this is funny. This is funny. So it's okay for Romania to potentially take parts of Ukraine. It's okay for Poland to potentially take parts of Ukraine. But if Russia takes parts of Ukraine, we have to fight World War III to stop them. Don't you think that's odd? Don't you think that's funny? I do. I think it's sad, actually, and dangerous. A controversial bill submitted to the Romanian parliament this week has urged the government to drop its recognition of Ukraine's borders by 2027 and annex territories where ethnic Romanians live. So not just formally, join them into the Romanian Republic, like Russia did, because Russia, they did have formal votes in Donetsk, in Lugansk, in Kherson, in Zaporozhye, and in Crimea. In all of those places, they had 85 to 96% of the public in these various regions say that they supported the idea of joining the Russian Federation. So this bitch right here, she's like, we just want to annex. We want to annex Ukraine. Okay, they're doing what the West accuses Russia of doing. Okay. The bill introduced by right-wing lawmaker Diana Sosooka would repeal a provision in the 1997 treaty with Ukraine, which pledged respect for each other's national borders. She described the document as the biggest act of treason in Romania's modern history because it recognized the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact, according to a formal justification of the bill. The Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, like the pact that protected your country from being immediately entirely occupied by Nazi Germany. Is that what you wanted? You wanted your country to be entirely occupied by Nazi Germany just right off the bat? Newsflash, the Soviet Union protected your ass. You would be living under a Nazi state right now if it weren't for the Soviet Union. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions more in your country would have been genocided by the Hitlerites and the Banderites if it were not for the USSR in creating that Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, because that allowed the USSR to build up their infrastructure, their industrial means, their military, their ammunitions, their artillery, their transit in an effort that allowed them to actually reign victorious in World War II. If it wasn't for that, they wouldn't have had enough time to actually achieve the stated goals prior to the war actually taking a turn for the worst. If it weren't for that pact, you would be living under a Nazi state right now. But I can't really assume that any political leaders are historically literate nowadays. I think that would be assuming far too much. That would be asking way too much. So this leader, this politician, Sosooka, was referring to the non-aggression agreement between the USSR and Nazi Germany sealed in August 1939, which included a classified portion delineating spheres of influence for Moscow and Berlin. Also, wasn't Poland's government already in exile? Was it already a government in exile? I mean, they had left. So their government ceased to exist. It was basically a free-for-all in Poland. When did Poland's government leave? Government evacuated from Poland and interred in Romania September 17th, 1939. And so that was August. So I guess it was right after that, August, September. It was literally a month after that, if these dates are correct. But the government literally fucking left. Everyone knew that was going to happen. It was either going to be taken over or they left, and they ended up leaving. And they were able to maintain a semblance of peace for some people there. Sosooka was referring to the non-aggression, The pact was one of such agreements signed by European nations with Adolf Hitler's government as they maneuvered diplomatically in the last days of the interwar period. Romania was a Nazi ally for a significant portion of World War II before switching sides. It lost some of its territories in the post-war settlement, which were added to Soviet Ukraine and Soviet Moldova. Okay, well, that's what happens. That's what happens. Sosooka listed several lands which she deems as historically Romanian and currently abusively held by Ukraine, from northern Bukovina to Snake Island. The latter part was part of a lengthy legal battle over maritime borders, which ended in 2009 with Kiev keeping sovereignty over the island. Romania would annex these territories under the bill. Okay, so apparently it's okay for Poland to annex part of Ukraine. It's okay for Romania to annex part of Ukraine. But if Russia legally brings these regions of Ukraine into the Russian Federation by way of public votes, that's illegal and we have to fight World War III. Also, the insanity of this bill. I mean, you're talking about agreements that prevented your country from being eternally ruled by Nazis and immediately taken over by Nazis, which would have resulted in millions more people dead. It's like we're saying this is the greatest, travesty of our country's history. Completely insane, but then again, I can't say I'm all that surprised. All right. On that note, folks, I'm out for the day. Thank you so much for tuning in. We had a bunch of great stories today. I appreciate you all tuning in. Until next time. Again, I was planning on streaming yesterday, but then I got pretty sick. So hopefully, fingers crossed, I'm good for next stream. I think I was just dehydrated, so I'll drink to that. All right, everybody. As always, if you want to support the show, you can check out our Patreon, our Giveson Go, or our Locals, or you can click the link in the description below. Take you straight to our merchandise store where you can get the best merch on the internet. Let's get some Z's in the chat. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. We got more great news on the way this week. Until next time, everybody, as always, fuck Dick Cheney. I'll see you all next time. Have a great rest of your night. Peace out.
Hurrah!